This podcast of The Exchange is sponsored by Dartmouth Hitchcock, creating a new model for healthcare where leading health systems collaborate to improve care for all of us. A sustainable system improving the health of our communities for years to come. Information at imagine.d-h.org.
And the Dagoba Group, a global diversity and inclusion consulting practice with specialties in unconscious bias, leadership dynamics, and client engagement. Authors of the book, The Inclusion Dividend. More at thedagobagroup.com.
And Northeast Credit Union, helping their members save money through free checking accounts and refinancing of auto, home, and personal loans. Northeast Credit Union, encouraging you to discover the difference at necu.org. Federally insured by NCUA, Equal Housing Opportunity.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. Listening to this year's presidential campaigns, it would seem that Americans are more scared and worried than ever. Some polls bear this out. For example, a November Quinnipiac poll shows many Americans fear a terrorist attack on U.S. soil more now than at any time since 9/11, with 4 out of 5 people surveyed saying they think such an event is likely. Also, on the economy, while a majority of Americans questioned by Gallup said they were satisfied with their own economic situations, their outlook for the future was much dimmer. But although the 2016 presidential campaigns have jumped on these worries, with some candidates saying that America is a mess or is in crisis or is weak and vulnerable, how much are they responding to real voter anxieties, and how much are they fueling our fears and frustrations? Today in The Exchange, anxious and angry voters. Our conversation today is part of a series by NPR and member stations on how voters are feeling across the country. Let's hear from you. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR, email exchange at nhpr.org, find us on Facebook or Twitter. We have 3 guests for the hour with me in studio, Wayne Lesperance, professor of political science at New England College, director of the Center for Civic Engagement. Wayne, thanks for coming in. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, Laura.
Joining us from Boston, James Pindle, political reporter for the Boston Globe, with a focus on the 2016 presidential race. And James, welcome back. Good to have you.
Thanks for having me.
And joining us for our first segment, Andy Smith, Associate Professor of Practice in Political Science and Director of the UNH Survey Center. Andy Smith, welcome back. Good to have you, too.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Well, Andy, to you first, how do you feel about this anxious voter or angry voter narrative this year?
I'm mad at them all. Well, you know, this is something that you see that occurs fairly routinely when the economy's not doing well. And it doesn't have to be that it's doing terribly. It doesn't have to mean that we're in a recession. But when the economy doesn't seem to be going well and people's personal prospects seem to be diminished, you see protest candidates rise up. And you can see that happening in certainly with the George Wallace in the early 1970s, definitely with Pat Buchanan in the 1992 and 1996 primary, and also during the 2004 primaries, when we were at war with Iraq or really going to war with Iraq, you saw that on the Democratic side quite a bit. So this does come up. I think it has a lot to do with economics, but foreign policy issues can be to come into play as well.
Well, and Andy, I'm glad you brought up the historical comparisons. Are voters, Andy, really any more anxious or angry this time around than in past elections? What do you think?
I don't know if they're more angry than they have been in the past, but I think there's an extra political layer that's on this time around. For Republicans, it makes sense to be angry because they've been out of power for 2 terms, and they really thought, a lot of Republicans really thought they should have won in 2012. They should have won with Romney, and they didn't. And they're looking for somebody to blame. And a lot of the more conservative wing of the Republican Party is blaming the Washington Republicans. So there is a bit of an internecine battle within the Republican Party that is showing up among voters. On the Democratic side, I think there's not so much anger as there is disappointment with some of the Obama years. And there's a desire to get somebody who's not been engaged in politics can maybe deliver on some of the things that the Obama administration was unable to do.
Well, and later on in the show, we will play some clips of various candidates touching on those themes that you mentioned, Andy. But how about you, Wayne Lesperance? What do you make of this narrative that the media is picking up on, the angry voter or the anxious voter?
No, I think it reflects what's going on out there. And I think we shine a lot more attention on it because we have candidates who have really tapped into it as mainstay for their candidacies, their campaigns. You know, part of it is perception. It's the percentage of people who think that the United States is on the wrong track, or they think that, you know, their future, their kids' future is not going to be as bright. Prospects for their kids are not going to be as bright as they are for themselves or their parents. And Andy's right. There's also, particularly among Republicans, this perception that not only should they have won 2012, but when they do elect Republicans to Congress, that those Republicans don't follow through on the promises they make to them. So if you think about the Tea Party movement as an example of an organization that really sort of stoked that anger, that said government isn't working and that we're going to do something about it. And then when nothing happens, that anger doesn't have any place to release, and it grows. And I think we see that today. So I think that historically, Andy is exactly right. I think that this has been stoked by political interests as a way of winning elections. And to some extent, the chickens have come home to roost.
What do you think, James Pindle?
What strikes me is that this is not ideological. This is not about conservative Republicans. It's not about liberal Democrats. The mood is against elites of all kinds. We know for the last 40 years we saw a shrinking middle class, people making less money than they ever have when you, in terms of the last 40 years, while the rich get richer. We've seen people, things get harder. There's a lot of middle class anxiety out there on basic things. How am I going to pay for college? Will I ever be able to retire? I'm not sure I quite understand how the Affordable Care Act works. Is that going to be a problem for me? Are my premiums continuing to go up? Why are things just harder? And in that context, in the same few decades, you have the media that's let us down. You certainly had our politicians that let us down. You even have the church letting us down, businesses and banks letting us down, our unions letting us down, even sports figures cheating letting us down. And there's this whole idea that the people who are supposed to be smart, the people who are supposed to be leading us, they're just not working for me. And so that's why you're seeing this huge backlash. You started to see this, the seeds of it, going all the way back from Sarah Palin's big rallies in 2008 to the pretty much same focus against the elites, whether it was the Occupy movement or the Tea Party movement. We're now seeing that happen, bubbling up in our presidential candidates. This is a populist movement against the elites, no matter how you feel about the solution.
Andy, what do the polls say about this?
Well, polling is difficult to measure anger because people don't like to necessarily say they're angry, but you can look at where their anger is focused. And I think James is exactly right, that you see Republicans not being happy with their elites, or a significant part of the Republican Party not happy with their elites. And they're, you know, basically, you know, if you look at the candidates that they're supporting, the mainstream candidates of the Republican Party that have historically won those nomination battles are just doing very poorly because they are seen as part of the problem, even if they haven't been the problem. So you really have to demonstrate your bona fides as somebody being way outside the political system, and certainly Donald Trump is able to do that. But we saw Ben Carson, Carly Fiorina for a while, and Ted Cruz being the most outside of the insiders, the person who wears his the fact that Washington doesn't like him as a badge of honor. So the polls are definitely showing that that's the case, as both Wayne and I think James point out, that if you look at the percentage of people who say the country is headed in the wrong direction, that is at very high levels. In New Hampshire, it is much, much higher than the percentage of people who think the state's going in the wrong direction. So the people that are experiencing the same sorts of environment really think it's at the country level, not the state level.
Well, and let's talk about this anti-elite sentiment or anti-establishment sentiment that, James, you mentioned. Here's Donald Trump in the last Republican debate responding to South Carolina Republican Governor Nikki Haley, who you could call an establishment figure, her call for voters to, as she said, resist the siren call of the angriest voices. Here's Trump's response.
Yes, I am angry. And I won't be angry when we fix it. But until we fix it, I'm very, very angry. And I say that to Nikki. So when Nikki said that, I wasn't offended. She said the truth. One of your colleagues interviewed me and said, well, she said you were angry. And I said to myself, huh? She's right. I'm not fighting that. I didn't find it offensive at all. I'm angry because our country is a mess.
Okay, so there's Donald Trump. Wayne Lesbron's kind of not trying to pile on too much to Governor Haley, but saying, yeah, I'm angry because the country is, quote unquote, a mess.
I think he took a moment that wasn't necessarily a very positive one for him. I mean, this was Nikki Haley's response to the State of the Union that, without saying the words Donald Trump, was a pushback on Donald Trump, and then, you know, sort of pivoted and made made the most of it, and he did it in a smart way. It reminds me of the response Bernie Sanders had to Bill Clinton's jab about, you know, Bernie being an angry guy, and Bernie's response was, "Yes, I am angry," and without saying it, the next line probably should have been, "And why? But why aren't you, Mrs. Clinton?" Right? Because voters are angry, and there is this frustration for all the reasons that James and Andy have been describing. That's out there. So I thought Trump made a smart move. He knows who his audience is. I mean, say what you will about Donald Trump. He knows who his audience is, and he's playing that crowd very, very well.
Well, and he went on to say in that discussion, he talked about, you know, the way veterans are treated, what he sees as the immigration problem, Obamacare, he mentioned. He had a long list of issues that he said voters are angry about.
That's right. And just let's pause on immigration for a second. And the first reaction to all the talk of immigration early on was, well, we have a problem with our border. But immigration is symbolic in a lot of ways. It's not just about the security of the border. It's about jobs. It's about terrorism. It's about the inability of the government to actually get something done after we've been talking about, right, border security and immigration for all of these years. So that one issue becomes this symbolic touch point for the frustration that a lot of Americans have, Republicans and Democrats, with a Washington that isn't getting things done. Whether that's fair or not as a criticism, it doesn't matter. That's what people are feeling. And he's tapped into that.
Andy, I've also heard people say that the frustration over immigration is due to the things that Wayne absolutely mentioned, but also, Andy, to some people feeling like America is changing. It's not the America they grew up with. Demographic diversity. I came across a statistic that said in 2014, half of kindergartners for the first time were from minority groups. So immigration kind of becomes a catch-all for this anxiety about a changing America.
Absolutely. And I think that's one of the reasons you see the age differences and the support for the outsider candidates. It's older voters in part that like a guy like Donald Trump, even because they're seeing that Donald Trump, especially older middle class or blue collar voters, are saying, you know, when I was growing up, America was the top dog in the world. We were primarily a European country. Yes, we did have minorities, but we were talking about African Americans and then some European ethnic minorities primarily. They've seen that change very dramatically and very quickly. And the perception that a lot of the new immigrants are not being assimilated is, I think, cause for problem. And as Wayne pointed out, the issue of immigration has so many facets to it that make it a very powerful issue to mean more than just people coming over the border. There is certainly the racial overtones. There are cultural overtones. There are the economic overtones that people are taking our jobs. You know, just seen in the paper yesterday, somebody's suing Walt Disney for bringing in H-1B visa workers to be trained by the people they are going to replace on their jobs. So that anxiety about immigration does touch into a lot of those other fears. But it's not new. We've seen these things happen before in the 1800s, the rise of the Know-Nothing Party. We certainly saw it in the early part of the 20th century. But that immigration was stopped for many, many, many years and really only picked up again in the 1970s and 80s. And we've seen concern about immigration ever since.
Well, and you mentioned some older voters tapping into that Donald Trump anger. Younger voters, from what I understand, James Pindle, are tapping into it on the left with Bernie Sanders and feeling his anger.
That's right. Well, they're feeling also his optimism and his hope. I don't think so much younger voters are angry as older Americans are. But, you know, there's a question about who is actually the heir of the Obama legacy and where do you go as a Democratic Party after Obama? Andy touched on this a little bit about the disappointment that many liberals have in what they saw was going to be this great progressive president. And look, I think looking back, even though he hasn't left office, Obama has been a transformational figure. He has dramatically transformed, particularly the Democratic Party. It is much more left than it ever was from the moments of the Clinton era. And the question is, do you lock it in? Do you lock in some of these gains that Obama has done and tweak them and, you know, and push them a little bit on the margins, which is pretty much what Hillary Clinton wants? Or do you go in a much more dramatic, more liberal fashion, and that tends to draw more idealistic younger people that are following the message of Bernie Sanders, which is something he's pushing right now.
Wayne, go ahead.
So, I mean, I think James is exactly right. I mean, when you think about it, I'm not sure who said it, but somebody framed it that Republicans are angry and that progressives seem to be more frustrated. And when we sort of look at the numbers, we see that, you know, what they're talking about is frustration about the failure to raise the minimum wage, to address climate change, to regulate Wall Street. I mean, these are central components of Bernie Sanders' stump speech and his campaign. And when we look at the data, Pew did a pretty interesting poll, and they looked at Republicans and Democrats in terms of this anger question. Republicans are three times more likely than Democrats to say they are angry at government. So I think there is a difference, and as James pointed out, you know, between Republicans and Democrats on this question. And part of that is because the current president for the last two terms has been a Democrat. And so Republicans are feeling the frustration and anger of being the party out of power in the White House.
So anger and anxiety are a little trickier for Democrats to talk about, Wayne, than Republicans.
Right.
The exchange number for you to join us, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Today in the exchange, how anxious or angry are New Hampshire voters this year? Give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. How are you feeling this election season? Are you feeling frustrated, angry, anxious? Pick your word. Tell us about it and give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. So, guys, all of you mentioned Donald Trump tapping into that sort of anti-establishment anger. On the right, on the left, as you all mentioned, we have Bernie Sanders, Vermont senator, talking about some of the things you mentioned, Wayne, sort of a litany of disappointments or frustrations. Here's Bernie Sanders at a campaign rally in Iowa, where he's responding to former President Clinton's comment that Sanders was an angry guy.
I am angry, and the American people are angry. They are angry that we are the only major country on earth that doesn't guarantee health care to all of our people. They are angry that we have more income and wealth inequality than any other major country on earth. They are angry that millions of our young people are graduating school deeply in debt. I am angry that we have a minimum wage of $7.25 an hour, which is a starvation wage. So there is a lot, in fact, to be angry about.
Again, that's Bernie Sanders speaking at a campaign rally in Iowa, talking about his own anger and frustration. And Andy Smith, what do you make of that? Again, the litany of frustrations, as Wayne said, that Bernie Sanders mentions.
I think it's exactly the case. That Wayne put it exactly right. There is frustration on the part of Democrats for not achieving the goals that the Obama administration had set out to reach. And to be fair, no administration can achieve all the goals they hope to get, and they disappoint their parties. But I think that the anger that you're hearing or the frustration you're hearing on the part on Sanders is definitely targeted at the younger voter who are looking forward to something rather than among like Trump is among older voters who may have felt they've lost something. And anger is a huge emotion to motivate people to vote. The question for the Sanders campaign, or the problem for the Sanders campaign, is whether or not that anger is going to be enough, or that frustration is going to be enough to motivate those young people to actually get out and vote on Election Day. He's winning by huge margins among younger people, but they are also the least likely to vote.
Well, and Andy, we just have about 30 seconds left, but you're our New Hampshire voter expert. Are you seeing these national trends reflected here in the Granite State, Andy?
Absolutely, and I think to a greater extent on the Democratic side, we're seeing Sanders leading very, very big. And among 35 and under people, he's got 81% of the vote there. And among people who have never voted in the primary before, so these are the new voters who may have been just energized by his campaign, he's well over 70% among that group. So among those people who have been kind of outside of the political system before, he's really motivated them. And it's important to point out that about 30% of the potential voters in New Hampshire in this primary either were not old enough to vote in 2008 or didn't live here in 2008. So that's a whole new block of people to energize.
All right. Andy, thank you so much. We know this is a very busy time of year for you. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
Andy Smith, director of the UNH Survey Center. More in a moment. This is The Exchange on NHPR. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Voters are said to be unusually anxious and even angry this election season. Give us a call and tell us how you're feeling. 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. Again, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. My guest for the hour, Wayne L'Esperance, professor of political science at New England College, director of the Center for Civic Engagement. Also with us, James Pindle, political reporter for the Boston Globe, with a focus on the 2016 presidential race. And gentlemen, joining us now is Jennifer Horn. She's chair of the New Hampshire Republican Party. And Jennifer Horn, good to have you. Thank you for being with us.
Well, good morning. It's my pleasure. It's good to be with everybody today.
Well, we were talking, Jennifer, a moment ago about the frustrations of voters this time, the anxieties. How would you describe the mood of Republican voters here in the Granite State?
Well, I think Republican voters here in the Granite State are actually very energetic. They're engaged. They're, I think, in many ways very optimistic as we head into this election cycle. You know, as we get closer and closer to primary day, I think the sense that there's a real chance to change the way, the direction of our nation, and to kind of bring better leadership, clearer leadership to our country, I think is something that Republicans are very excited about.
So interesting. So they may have their frustrations, but they're excited about the possibilities of changing those frustrations. In other words, changing the leadership.
Absolutely. Look, there's no question that voters across the country are frustrated and angry at the failures of Washington. And, you know, whether they're talking about, you know, individual members of Congress, whether they're talking about a broken system, or they're talking about 7 years of failed leadership and broken promises from this president, and unfortunately, Secretary Clinton as well, I think that that's a justified frustration that voters are feeling. But as we head toward Election Day, you know, the real belief, the understanding that we can choose a different direction, that we can choose better leadership, greater, you know, somebody who is a leader who actually embraces the greatness of our nation and can kind of return us to that inspirational and uplifting leadership that we've had in the past, I think is something that not just Republicans, but voters across the state are actually very optimistic and positive about.
Well, and when you get all the ads in your mailbox, Jennifer Horn, or when you see the TV ads or the ads on the internet, optimism isn't what I'm used to describe. I think you know what I'm talking about. What do you make of that? I hear you that Republicans are excited about their opportunity to perhaps retake the White House. But boy, just looking at the ads, it's like worse, worse, bad, bad, and terrible, terrible.
Well, you know, it's funny you said that because I cleared out my mailbox last night and had
a whole pile
of ads in there. And the truth is, there was a mix in there. There were a lot of ads in there that were from the candidates that were very forward-looking and, you know, about a clearer, better vision for the future of our country. But, Laura, we're in a primary. And, you know, there's nothing – the Republican primary is no different than the Democrat primary, and this year is no different than past cycles in that, you know, when you're running against, you know, multiple opponents, you have to not just show, you know, why you're the right choice, but why the other guy is not the right choice. So – there's nothing, you know, unusual or extraordinary about the idea that, you know, two or more politicians in a primary are, you know, trying to point out the weaknesses or the failures of the other. That's part of what happens in politics. But I think that at the core of what we're seeing right now is that this anger and this frustration that has been building up for a long time and certainly has, you know, kind of spilled over into the primary process is now going to be, you know, shifting toward among voters a much more, you know, positive and optimistic feeling as they get to the point where they can actually take an action that will change the direction we're headed. And that's what Election Day is all about.
Well, last question for you, Jennifer, please. We talked a moment ago about how some Republican voters are saving much of their anger for the establishment of their own party. As a party leader, how do you feel about that?
Well, I'm always interested when folks start talking about the establishment in New Hampshire. The truth is there are no smoky back rooms in New Hampshire politics, certainly not on the Republican side, where decisions are being made and strings are being pulled. I understand excuse me, I understand the frustration that people are feeling. You know, it's been over seven straight years now of one failure after another. I think that they are tired of politicians who lie, politicians who think that they are above the law, politicians who think that, you know, they can have a top secret email sent to their private servers and not be held accountable for that. I think that there's a lot of anger and frustration at the idea that Washington is somehow above everyone else. But again, this is where I think, you know, this is kind of the moment where all of that starts to shift and people are able to embrace the opportunity to engage in a process where they can actually change that, where they can actually take action and see the results of that. That's what Election Day is always about, Laura, not just this year, but that's always what Election Day is about. And the Republican Party and the Republican primary field offers a broad, diverse, highly qualified field of candidates who are ready to go to Washington and make that change. And I think that that's what this election is about, and that's what the conversation is going to be about.
All right. Well, Jennifer Horn, thank you very much for giving us your time. And I know we'll be talking to you a couple more times before primary day. So thank you for being here.
We're looking forward to it. Have a great week.
That's Jennifer Horn, chair of the New Hampshire Republican Party. In a few minutes, we'll talk to Ray Buckley, chair of the New Hampshire Democratic Party. But right now, gentlemen, James Pindle, Wayne Lesperance, let's go to our listeners. Lots of people want to jump in and tell us how they're feeling 2 weeks before primary day. Again, the exchange number is 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Kevin's calling in from Bedford. Hi, Kevin. You're on the exchange. Welcome.
Well, thank you. Good morning, longtime listener. This is maybe my third time calling in. Love your show. You know, I am angry, but I don't agree with Jennifer. I'm a Republican since the day I was born. I'm just turned 60. I'm not excited. I'm worried. The fact that we have, you know, just so many Republicans slinging mud. A couple of the candidates keep calling because my wife wants one guy and I wanted another. And I kept saying, tell me what you're going to do, not what this guy isn't going to do. But, you know, Washington is out of control, including Congress. I mean, the first 4 years, president was on his own. Now we get the Congress. They still don't do anything. Petraeus gets fired over an email, but Clinton doesn't. Fast and furious. People on welfare. You know, where's all this money coming from? But I'm nervous because we reelected these folks 4 years ago, and they're not getting it done. So maybe it is time.
Time for what, Kevin? Sorry to interrupt you there. Yeah.
No, that's okay. Maybe it is time for a change. Now, at first, you know, I like what Donald Trump says. I do. I still like it. I don't like what he says after he makes that point, because it doesn't sound like a leader to me. It's still we're in the mud. But I think we need a change down there. We need term limits. We got to get some new blood in there. But I'm a salesman by trade. For 10 years, I worked as a rep where I got paid only if I sold something. Imagine if we paid Congress the $175,000 a year they get or whatever it is when they actually get something done, like X dollars for every bill that they pass, X dollars for every hospital they build or school or road or whatever. Those guys would be out on Willow Street, South Willow Street, panhandling.
Well, Kevin, it's great to hear from you. And, you know, Wayne, this is real interesting because my mailbox is completely full, as is, you know, everybody else's. But I got one the other day that I'd not seen before that taps into exactly what Kevin is saying. This particular flyer didn't, you know, say anything about any particular presidential candidate. It talked about Congress and how it's sort of a do-nothing Congress, to use Harry Truman's words.
Well, and I think that's being reflected by a lot of folks. I mean, somebody alluded to this earlier in the hour that, you know, part of the frustration that's out there is with government, that, you know, whether it's the view that the elected officials are not trustworthy, whether elected officials are bought and paid for by special interests. This is sort of the establishment question that you were asking Jennifer about, their ability to actually get things done. And when we look at the numbers, among Republicans, 75%, according to the Pew results, say that their side is always losing the argument. They're losing on the issues that matter. So if you're feeling that 3/4 of the time your side isn't winning, then, you know, one of the equations in the old Bill Belichick model is you got to change your players. You got to change who's on the field. And I think that is part of what Kevin is talking about. And then, you know, the just broader question of, you know, when you look at the numbers of people that actually trust their government, you know, it's 19%, and that's even lower in terms of faith in the institution of Congress itself. So institutions of government have been taking a beating for a very long time. And it's not lost on me that one of the Republican talking points is that, you know, government is the problem. You can only say that so long before people really believe you. And then when you try to turn to government as a as an agent of change or as a, something that's going to bring a solution, you don't have the credibility to begin with. The problems that we're seeing among voters is much deeper than this election cycle. It's something that's been building for some time. You know, American institutions are under siege and they're failing. And so, I mean, that may sound, you know, a little over the top, but I really do think that if you take the long view of this, the direction that we're moving in is bad news. This anger is only going to get worse. And so I think Kevin's comments are quite prescient.
What do you think, James?
Yeah, 3 points on that. Number one, Wayne, it's too early to bring up Bill Belichick. Okay?
Sorry.
I was going to say something, but...
you know, number two is, you know, I've been hearing a lot of from people who are starting to really plug into this campaign. And they'll say, you know, Donald Trump is just really intriguing. Some of the things he says, though, there's no way that's going to happen. Or they say the same thing with Bernie Sanders. They're like, look, I love the idea of some of the things he can say, but James, can he actually do these things? And the point for a number of these candidates is actually implementing is never going to happen. I mean, look, George W. Bush couldn't get a lot done. We have a broken Congress. Barack Obama couldn't get much done. So maybe the point is to pick a protest president that can at least talk about the agenda that you want, because Congress is not going to pass anything anyway. I mean, let's be honest. You're not going to probably have 60 votes in the Senate, either party. And if it's a Democrat who wins, the U.S. House will probably be Republican. And then the third, on third point I'd make, which is what Dwayne was saying, and that's sort of where I led off with this conversation this hour, this 40-year loss of trust. What's interesting about it to me is that, yes, we have lost faith in all sorts of institutions, and I rattled them off at the top of the hour. But the response from Republicans and Democrats is different. For Democrats, they still want government to fix it. With Republicans, there is an increasing belief that government, if you're not going to fix it, if you're not going to help, just get the hell out of the way. And that's where you saw this rise of libertarianism that I think we would have had played a bigger role this time. I think we all expected Rand Paul to be a bigger factor than he was this time, but probably the terrorism and ISIS probably ended that his more isolationist position. But I think you do see two completely different segments: Republicans saying, "Government, just leave me alone, okay? Just leave me alone," and then you have Democrats saying, "Please fix this system."
Well, and to Kevin's point, and thank you, Kevin, for the call, about focusing the anger not just on the presidential field or the current occupant of the White House, but on Congress in general, Washington in general. Let's hear a little bit from Ben Carson. Here he is talking at the January 14th GOP debate.
In recent travels around this country, I've encountered so many Americans who are discouraged and angry as they watch our freedom, our security, and the American dream slipping away under an unresponsive government that is populated by bureaucrats and special interest groups. We're not going to solve this problem with traditional politics. The only way we're going to solve this problem is with we, the people.
Again, that's Ben Carson speaking earlier this month. Today in The Exchange, we are tapping into what voters are supposedly saying. They are unusually anxious and even angry this election season. That's what the polls tell us. Tell us how you are feeling. 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. And James and Wayne, let's go back to our listeners. And from Dover, James is calling in. Hi, James. Go ahead.
Yes, good morning. How are you doing, Laura? First-time caller, long-time listener.
Good, welcome.
I just have a couple of general questions, I guess. I'm a registered Democrat. I support a lot Bernie Sanders. But my question is, basically, Republicans and Republican supporters, their continual, statement of less government, we need, stuff to get done, but they're in charge. And if you want to be in charge but have less government, that doesn't register with me. I don't understand that fully. And my second statement is, I'm 31 years old. I guess I was born after America was great, and the Make America Great Again statement, and why, I guess my question is, why does America have to be great? Why does America have to be responsible for everything? Like, whenever something goes wrong, the first statement is, who's responsible for this? And why would we want to put ourselves in that situation?
So you're talking about, like, global affairs, James?
I mean, everything in general. Like, you know, make America great again. That's all you hear. It's like, but they don't say what aspects of America need to be great in order to fulfill that statement of, we are great again.
Okay. Like,
that's basically, I mean, I've been on hold for a minute, so I guess I lost my train of thought there for a little bit.
That's all right, James. It's all good. Yeah. And I hear what you're saying in terms of, you know, checking out what these candidates are saying after they make the big statement, let's make America great again and so forth. What do you think, James Pindle?
Yeah, I mean, James has taken the approach almost on foreign policy, but the why, the make America great again, and you're hearing other Republicans say essentially the same words without saying the same words in terms of their own catchphrases. It goes to this bigger sentiment that I think Wayne and I have been trying to explore a little bit, which is, look, in post-World War II America, things were on the upswing. We felt good about the country. Things were getting easier. We had access to pensions. We had access to health care. Your kids would have the belief that, you know, they're going to have live a better life than you, that they're going to move out, that people are going to be happy, that, you know, if you work hard, you play by the rules, you too can live by the American dream. And I think the sentiment that's really going on is more domestic than it is foreign policy, though that is certainly wrapped up into the message of Donald Trump. The idea is that, my goodness, things are just getting harder. And for those who are 31 or younger, I mean, look at the situation. Older people don't think quite understand it, but you have these student loans that are essentially more than a mortgage for a lot of people. It's hard for them to even get a job. I know Wayne knows this because he lives a business with his students who are graduating under this crushing debt, and they can't get jobs. So they get, like, these permanent internships because our economy is still slugging along very, very slowly. And then it's really hard just to get ahead. And then for the older Americans, they've lost their pension. We've moved to 401ks in the 1970s and 80s. We're nervous about the market because we're not quite sure how to invest, and maybe we didn't save enough money. And then are just things getting more expensive, and they're getting harder? And what is this America? I don't even recognize it anymore. And then there is this sense on the foreign affairs that America is not projecting its power. We don't have this, you know, duality of the U.S. versus the Soviet Union in the Cold War. It's a much more complicated world. We see threats that we're not really tackling. We see China and Russia both, you know, challenging our status. Right? We thought we were in 12, you know, two wars, and the longest war in United States history, taking on terrorists in the Middle East. And my goodness, isn't it getting worse? So there's this sense that things aren't just going well. I mean, obviously our right track, wrong track number that Wayne mentioned, and we're like 27% of people who think things are going right. So we just, can we just make America great again? And that's where that phrase comes from.
Thank you, James, for the call. Here's an email that kind of picks up on what James says. I'll throw this to you, Wayne. Could some of this anger be associated to our society's unrealistic expectations, such as having complete safety, or that we can ignore the opposite point of view? That's, again, an email from Dennis. What do you think, Wayne?
I mean, maybe to some extent, but those sentiments, you know, that's nothing new, right? I mean, this idea that we all want to grow up in a safe neighborhood, we want our kids to go to good schools, that we want to drink clean water, hello, Flint, Michigan, we want to, you know, breathe clean air. I mean, that's not something that's new to this particular cycle or this period in American history. You know, there's a lot to it. I think James covered it pretty well. But I think at the end of the day, people are feeling insecure generally, and candidates are tapping into that, and they're to some extent feeling that.
All right. We'll talk more after a short break. James, thank you for that call. We'll also check in with Ray Buckley, chairman of the New Hampshire Democratic Party, and take more of your calls at 1-800-892-6477. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, voters are said to be unusually anxious and even angry this election season. Tell us how you're feeling. 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. Our conversation today is part of a series by NPR and member stations on how voters are feeling across the country. Again, you can join us here in the Granite State, 1-800-892-6477. With us now on the line is Ray Buckley, chairman of the New Hampshire Democratic Party. And Ray, welcome back. Good to have you.
Good morning.
Well, we talked earlier with your counterpart on the Republican side, Jennifer Horn, asking her to describe the mood of her party's voters. How about yours, Ray Buckley? How would you describe the mood of Democrats this primary season?
I think there's a lot of excitement going on there. The campaigns have really generated an enormous amount of grassroots effort, which we're very excited about here at the state party because we believe it's going to turn into a real ground operation for us in November. I think one only has to look at what happened this past weekend with the Republican Party's event with their presidential candidates and a couple hundred people there. And every picture I saw had, you know, at least a third of the room empty. And we've got over 6,000 people that have bought tickets to our event with our candidates on Friday, February 5th. So I think you really look at the differences in the campaigns. You don't see the negative barrage of attacks that you see one after another, just completely eviscerating each other on the Republican side. You're just not seeing that on the Democratic side.
Well, in fairness, they've got a lot more candidates, so there's a lot more to tussle over.
Well, they may have a lot more candidates, but they may have quantity, but we have quality. I'm very proud of the campaigns that Secretary Clinton and that Governor O'Malley and Senator Sanders are doing here in New Hampshire. All of them have really invested in the old-fashioned New Hampshire grassroots effort. They've all gone from town to town. They've talked to people on the main streets and in the living rooms, and they've really done exactly what the New Hampshire primary was supposed to be about. And trying to figure out what's going on the Republican side is a fool's errand.
Ray, as we talk about what voters are frustrated about this year, and whether it's, you know, we've heard from some of our callers already, student debt, Washington gridlock, the state of the economy, and so forth, how can your party's presidential candidates tap into these very real voter concerns without sounding like they're saying President Obama has done a bad job?
Well, I think there's a big difference between frustration and being angry, and you certainly are seeing anger on the Republican side. On our side is, obviously, people are frustrated with what the Republican Congress and folks like Kelly Ayotte have done in Washington by blocking the president's proposals and really moving the country forward. We all know the story about the night of his inaugural, the Republican leadership getting together saying that their number one priority is to make him a one-term president. That's exactly where the Republicans like Kelly Ayotte have done and what Chris Sununu does on the Executive Council every day with Governor Hassan.
So you're saying you just focus the lack of ability to get things done on the Republicans, not on Obama.
Well, I think that what the president has been able to accomplish despite these Republican roadblocks are just been phenomenal. I mean, we've had our economy has been turned around. We've got record growth, 30 straight months of private sector job growth. I mean, we've got 90,000 folks right here in New Hampshire that now have health insurance that didn't before President Obama was in office. You know, we've got plans to solve the problems. We're talking about future. It's like things, they're just ripping each other to shreds and talking about fear and negativity. No wonder the Republican voters are angry. That's all they're hearing from their candidates.
All right. Well, Ray, thank you very much for being with us. And again, we'll be talking to you again over the next couple of weeks.
Great. Thank you.
That's Ray Buckley, again, chairman of the New Hampshire Democratic Party. We heard a few minutes ago from Jennifer Horn, chair of the New Hampshire Republican Party. So, Wayne, I want to turn to you on this. The idea that Democrats tap into the anger of the voter with caution, because, again, if you say that things are terrible, then you're basically saying your guy, President Obama, did a bad job.
Right. And I mean, this is one of the difficult lines that candidates have to walk. You know, to what extent are they, as Hillary Clinton did recently in a debate, hugging the president every chance she got? Or are they gently criticizing or nudging? I mean, we've talked about the frustration among Democratic voters about, particularly progressive Democrats, about you know, things like minimum wage and global climate change, things like that. So can you find a way to say, look, this is what I want to do without it becoming a criticism or an indictment on the sitting president? So it's a bit of a tricky thing, but I think they've both managed it. The two leaders, at least, have managed it pretty well. And we just had Martin O'Malley over at New England College, and And, you know, it certainly wasn't a time to criticize the president when he spoke. And the focus really was on, you know, how do we build on the legacy of the Obama administration?
All right. Let's take another call. And this is Frank in Rye. Hi, Frank. Go ahead. You're in the exchange. Welcome.
Hi, Laura. I appreciate you taking the call.
Sure. Go ahead. To me,
the big issue is debt. You know, we have $18 trillion in debt, and within 5 to 10 years, we're supposed to have up to $26 trillion in debt. So to me, I just think the politicians need to cut to the chase and get to the bottom line that people need to hear, and that's the fact that we don't have a lot of money. People want free tuition. They want Medicaid expansion. And, you know, down the road when the government doesn't subsidize the states for, you know, the Medicaid reimbursements now, the states are going to have to find ways and sources of funds to meet the Medicaid expansion. But, you know, the entitlement, Social Security, as, you know, a lot of people are getting on Medicare, and just our military, everybody wants, you know, a source of funds to go towards these programs. But the bottom line is that right now we have a lot of debt.
So that's your frustration, Frank. So who do you hear addressing that the best? Who do you think?
Me personally?
Yeah, sure.
Well, you know, I guess my, you know, to me, the solution to that problem is this sort of redistribution philosophy, which is going to take, you know, the 1% to pay for all these bills. The bottom line is that you could take the top 1% of the people and take 100% of their incomes, and you're never going to be able to solve the debt problem. And this debt problem really is not as bad now as it could be. But as soon as we start getting back to market rates where it gets to 3 to 5%, you know, about 90% of our tax dollars is going to go into servicing the debt. So I just feel that candidates need to talk about it. But I also think that the voters need to be aware that this is a huge problem. And all these things that people are saying for really distracting solutions is never going to happen until we deal with this debt.
Okay. Frank, thank you for calling in. And, you know, James Pindle, I have not heard a lot about the debt this time around, unlike in the early 90s. Remember Ross Perot? This was his singular issue. But I think, James, some of the Republican candidates did recently focus on this. One of them had a debt clock, I think, that he was bringing around to a campaign events. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm so glad Frank called, because it goes to this other issue, which is comes right off the heels of all this anger, which is, it's not just the debt. It's the issues don't matter at all. You're not seeing these candidates put forth the comprehensive health care plan. I guess, you know, Bernie Sanders has his plan for a single payer, and Hillary Clinton's announced what kind of tweaks she wants to give to Obamacare. But you're not seeing candidates, you know, really give anything in terms of a substantive policy conversation on issue after issue after issue. Chris Christie began to do that in the late spring and into the summer. He does have a plan on entitlements, for example. But we have some major issues facing this country that people are upset about, and you hear the debt, you hear about Social Security often. You can hear about transportation problems. You can hear about the energy grid. You can hear about climate change. But we haven't, these candidates are not forced to detail their positions like they have in the past, because right now there's so many Americans just saying, I just want you to get it. I want you to get my frustration. I want you to get my anger. And, you know, that's the more important thing, it seems to be, than actually what do you want to do about it.
Go ahead, Wayne.
I mean, that's a really great point. And what, you know, what happens then is a candidate details their anger and frustration about an issue, and then the response is, and don't you worry, my plan's going to be huge and it's going to be fantastic, and, you know, and that's it. That's their plan. I think a lot of us have been waiting for the campaign to sort of evolve from the sort of introductory phase, the biography phase, to the substantive phase, and we're still waiting. I think that's a remarkable aspect of this particular cycle.
Well, and Frank, it's good to hear from you. And here's another email. This is from Becky, who says, I'm a registered Republican, and I must say I don't agree with Jennifer. Again, that's Jennifer Horn, the chair of the party. Becky says, I'm not optimistic. I'm exhausted. My husband and I have college degrees, good jobs, live a modest lifestyle with our two children. Despite being solidly middle class, we struggle to make contributions to our retirement, have no idea how we might help our children pay for college when the time comes. For me, Becky says, the American dream feels unachievable, and I have not heard any specifics from any of the candidates to have faith that they have a plan that can deliver the relief we crave. Becky says, 2 weeks out from the primary, and I am still undecided. Wow. Becky, thank you so much for that email. We also got a Facebook comment from Joe, who says, frustration turning to anger, because when these sorts of stories are reported, they rarely touch on the things I'm frustrated about. Joe says, I'm 100 times more concerned about our disintegrating infrastructure than I am about terrorists. Water, roads, energy, social services. I'm no longer interested in the boogeyman of the week. These are real issues that need some attention. Joe says, I'm more likely to get killed by a bridge falling on my head than I am by ISIS. You know, Wayne Lesperance, we haven't talked that much about national security yet, said to be a huge source of anxiety for voters this year.
Sure. And I think that, you know, interestingly, to that last Facebook comment, it's when these things bubble up in the media and become sort of sensationalized stories that folks begin to tune in and sort of, I think, get a sense of just how deep the challenges are. So the attacks on Paris, the attack in San Bernardino really shifted the spotlight onto national security issues and, you know, exacerbated people's anxieties. We have data that tells us, polling data that tells us that people are as concerned now about a terrorist attack on the United States as they were in the days after 9/11. That's remarkable. And then when we see the story out of Flint, Michigan, right, you know, not necessarily an infrastructure story, but it is an infrastructure story. And I think it helps to point, you know, the fact that especially young kids were poisoned really shines a spotlight on the fact that we've got real fundamental problems. As James said, there are real issues that this country's facing, and we're not getting serious and talking about them. We're just sort of bloviating with anger and frustration about them, and that's what's passing for presidential campaigns these days. And we have to do better than that.
Well, it's interesting. President Obama, in his State of the Union address a couple weeks back, talked about ISIS and seemed to, Wayne and James, try to straddle a line between, yes, they're a concern, but don't go overboard. And that was clearly aimed at the Republican field. Let's hear what President Obama said.
As we focus on destroying ISIS, over-the-top claims that this is World War III just play into their hands. Masses of fighters on the back of pickup trucks, twisted souls plotting in apartments or garages, they pose an enormous danger to civilians. They have to be stopped. But they do not threaten our national existence. That is the story ISIL wants to tell. That's the kind of propaganda they use to recruit.
So again, President Obama talking about what he feels is over-the-top rhetoric from the Republicans on ISIS or ISIL. What do you think, James Pindle, national security and how much it's fueling voter anxiety?
It's fueling more anxiety among Republicans than it is among Democrats. National security has been a very much of a top issue throughout the campaign year of this New Hampshire primary. Among the Democrats, it bubbled up to be the number one issue following San Bernardino and following Paris. But now the economy and jobs is back to be number one. And, of course, for Republicans, immigration is tied up directly into national security. I don't think you're seeing a lot of criticism from Democrats on national security. And I think one of the reasons why is that, you know, Hillary Clinton is obviously wedded to the Obama administration on national security because of the years as Secretary of State. And Bernie Sanders really is not bringing this up to the degree that I, frankly, am a little surprised he's not. Not bringing up her vote in Iraq, which he does bring up every now and then. But it's just beyond that. I mean, the things Obama has done, even after he won a Nobel Peace Prize. Liberals are very upset about the drone program. But, you know, Bernie Sanders doesn't really talk about that. So I think you see Democrats really rallying behind the president on national security, and then you see Republicans just really upset, thinking that this idea of that we're leading from behind or that our pivot to Asia didn't really work because it means that we're not taking our eyes off of Russia. I think Republicans are much more frustrated about that than Democrats are right now.
Well, and here's an email concerned about some of the things that you just raised, James, the costs of war, what exactly we are doing abroad. This is Alex in Rochester who says, I'm frustrated that none of the major presidential candidates seem to care the slightest bit about both the human and financial cost of the ongoing U.S.-led airstrikes in Iraq and Syria, or how such airstrikes may be worsening the overwhelming refugee crisis in Europe. Alex says not even Bernie Sanders, the most progressive major candidate, who has gone on record as supporting such airstrikes, which Alex says are costing U.S. taxpayers billions of dollars, will speak out against such war, violence, and economic waste. Alex, thank you for that email. And, gentlemen, let's take one more call. And perhaps Neil in Plymouth. Go ahead, Neil.
Hi. I've been a lifelong Republican. I haven't missed an election since 1971. But this time around, I've decided I'm going to be an independent. And I feel that both the established parties have lost contact with the average citizen's needs and issues. If you work in McDonald's or you're a small business owner, the deck is stacked against you, and the insidious influence of the super wealthy and the Wall Street firms is just stealing the hope of the people, the average voter, the average citizen.
So, Neil, and we're closing to getting close to the end of the hour, and I do apologize for jumping in on you. So, feeling economic frustrations, you said you're a lifelong Republican. Who among the Republicans are speaking to your concerns?
I haven't seen anybody, and I feel that Bernie Sanders has keyed in on the important issues to the average citizen.
So, Republican, who's going to vote for Bernie?
Right.
Okay. All right, Neil, thank you very much for calling in. We appreciate it. Sorry to get to cut you off there. Go ahead, James, real quick, and then I want to finish out with Wayne, too.
Very quick. You know, Laura, I was having a big conversation about 2 or 3 years ago with a pretty prominent person in Washington about where all this anger would go. You saw this bubbling up. We saw the lack of institutions. You need faith in it. And his argument is that people would just give up, that they would throw up their hands. And my argument is that politicians can read a poll and will appeal to this anger. I think we're both right at the end of the day. And I think one thing you heard in that call is, and I think I've heard a lot in focus groups this year, is that people constantly say, I have all these problems. No one seems to get it. And Washington, both parties, it's just a game to them.
Okay, James, I've got to cut you off there. Yeah. I do apologize. And Wayne, very interesting to hear a Republican voting for Bernie Sanders.
Absolutely. And I think what James just said is a great way to finish because I think it captures it perfectly.
Okay, both of you gentlemen, we didn't have enough time. I want to thank everybody who called and emailed. Thank you so much. This is The Exchange on NHPR.